good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton Cup, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudigee, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Distant Thunder, my colonized name is Robert Pilot, and we discuss national and Twin City Native American news and events. And as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Today's kind of a special day here. It's like Lewis and I are the only ones that are working today. And State Senator Mary Kunish has dropped off a segment for us to listen to, and she's always very, very good and entertaining. We're going to be doing the powwow, and hopefully we're not going to die of a tornado or anything coming out there, because there's going to be a big storm, probably while you're listening to this. But, Ogama's at another funeral with her family. Wendy's in New York with her family. And so it's just Lewis and I. And why don't we start now with Lewis with the news. Welcome, Lewis.
Hello, everyone out there. Yeah, I'm going to try to run it through real quick here. We got a tremendous show, even though we're pre-recording. That's how we do it on Native Roots Radio. But we have on tomorrow, we actually have a couple of actions taking place. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, Red River Water Warriors, that is Red River Water Warriors, tomorrow at 11 a.m. is a rally at Red River, Stop Line 3 action at Dyke East. It's 102nd Street, Fargo, North Dakota. You can find more about that, and that's at Red River Water Warriors on Facebook page. And it looks like it's just a peaceful walk. They're asking people to make signs and walk in that good way. On Sunday, this Sunday coming up at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, we have the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Survivors Walk and Event. This is a free event out by Raspberry Island. Outside of Spring Hill Suite at the 7th Street and Jackson at 11 a.m., we will meet at 7th Street and Jackson for the opening ceremony and walk. Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Awareness Walk takes place from the 7th Street Jackson to Raspberry Island, just over the bridge from good old Harriet Island. Water ceremony will be taking place once we arrive at Raspberry Island. Prayer vigil held at the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Survivors area. Speakers will include MMI survivors and honored speakers. Meet and greet with murdered and missing Indigenous survivors and honored guests. Trickster Tacos will be there. So if you're hungry, don't eat. Get there and partake with Trickster Tacos. They'll be on hand for you to buy fry bread meals, as we are so grateful for them for donating a portion of their event sales to this event. I think that's great. Currently right now, Robert, there is a line Friday, August 20th. It's pretty early here, but it looks like McGizzy is trying to stop Enbridge there from taking money. And they are fighting line three. And this looks like it's at St. Louis County, Northern Minnesota. Enbridge continues to trespass indigenous land, continues to dewater river streams in a time of perilous drought, continues to use state violence against water protectors, and continuing this tar sand. So they're asking people to donate to the bail funds, because it looks like some of these line three protectors may be arrested up there. Another big piece of news really quick is that Park Rapids suspends Enbridge water withdrawal from city hydrants. And of course, this is a big deal this summer. Today, the city of Park Rapids, Minnesota, stopped selling municipal water to Precision Pipeline, a contractor with Enbridge who's working on construction on the Line 3 pipeline across 1855 treaty territory. The city began selling water out of the city fire hydrants early this summer to support Enbridge operations. In early June, water meters and hoses were installed at three different locations in Park Rapids to facilitate Precision's pipeline's quick and easy to access to the water. Other businesses purchasing water in bulk are required to purchase their water at the Park Rapids bulk water facility. According to the Park Rapids Water and Sewer Department website, the average daily demand for municipal water is over 500,000 gallons. On August 2nd, 2021, Precision Water withdrew 68,000 gallons of water, ladies and gentlemen, from just one of the three hydrants, nearly 15% of the average daily demand. Park Rapids residents Pam Brock has been monitoring the hydrant on Highway 34 near Larson Avenue. On August 2nd, the meter showed 1.6 million gallons. The next day, it showed 1.7 million gallons. That's at least a total of 68,000 gallons. When asked about the Park Rapids selling water to contractors constructing Line 3, City Administrator Angelica Wiesner said, "I was not notified yesterday by the state of Minnesota that we've been elevated to quote-unquote extreme conditions, and we will need to contact our top 10 vendors at the site point on time. They, Precision Pipeline, are one of them, and we are one to allow them to withdraw any more water. We're not going to allow them to withdraw any more water." Over the whole time frame since early June, they have withdrawn over 6 million gallons of water. To get a sense of what 6 million gallons of water withdrawal looks like, the tanker, normal sizes of tankers are 53 feet long and has a capacity to carry 10,000 gallons. It would take 600 of these trucks to carry 6 million gallons. That's a 6-mile long bumper to bumper truck line of trucks. Meanwhile, lakes and rivers in the area are at their lowest levels in decades, according to the Minnesota DNR weekly stream flow report. Most of the rivers in the upper Mississippi watershed are running at below 10% normal capacity.
Lewis, it's crazy. Even the mainstream media is talking about it, which is about time. You know, where we have Enbridge sucking up all that water up in the deep north and the occupied north, and now we're all going out red alert here with this water shortage and this drought.
Yeah, and it's kind of telling to see how much water they're pumping out. And you would think they would inform local residents of this water, you know, that these corporations are taking, but it seems that even local residents are not aware of all of this water that's being taken out of their municipalities. They're just a big mess, especially around this drought happening.
Yeah, and I know Channel 5 in the local area here, News KSTP, they had a news thing yesterday. They're going down 50 feet deeper to dig wells now than they normally did, even as last year.
Yeah, that's time, that's energy spent, and again, irreversible damage to our waterways. I mean, taking this much water, I mean, who's going to replace that? You know, who's going to be the one responsible if we have an ecological disaster because of this?
Right. And we need water. So what's happening? We're losing our water, and we have companies coming in, foreign companies stealing our water. You know, what else you got, Lewis? We only got like a minute and a half left.
Oh, shoot. Okay. I'll get to this real quick story. I wanted to give a shout out to the Lakota Makoche, Lakota people out there on Kyle. On Tuesday, August 10th, during a social distant COVID-19 safe ceremony, the Oyate Teka project celebrated breaking ground on a new 21,000 square foot community center. This new community center is going to be built across the $6.5 million Skull construction assistance by local contractors. They're looking at September 2022 to be completely done with this. The center is called Oyate Takolaku Community Center, Friends of All Nations in Lakota. And this is named for Jean Sirzik, the founder and president for Running Strong American Indian Youth. This new center will include a multi-purpose gym with a concession stand, home economics teaching kitchen, home economics teaching kitchen, and a preservation canning kitchen. Basically, what they want to do, Robert, is try to instill, food sovereignty on tribes and try to educate our young ones in understanding food cultivation, farming, and eating traditional foods. I think this is a really important project for not only the Lakota people, for all indigenous people all over the all over Turtle Island.
Wow, great reporting here. We miss Ogama and Wendy. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be back after this short break. Pinigigi, Lewis, for your words and the news.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Please call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Ham Matakiape, it's State Senator Mary Kunish. August 19th, 2021. I'm not going to be there live for our usual discussion with Robert and the team, but I'll share a little bit about what's been going on. I hope you all are handling this heat. It's been pretty warm for an awful long time, and just remember that we are under serious statewide fire danger and burning restriction due to the ongoing drought. And due to the drought, not only has the water dropped in all of our lakes and streams, I think the Mississippi River is the lowest I've seen in 12, 13 years, but we're also in a season of unusually high wildfire risk here in Minnesota. So just please be careful, everyone. We want to make sure that everybody is safe, that our towns and our natural resources are not going to be burned up. We want to protect those natural resources. So the DNR has mandated that there are no fires allowed on any of the DNR-managed lands in the 35 counties. And there are additional restrictions on burning garbage or debris, campfires, and fireworks especially, you guys. Those fireworks will spark a fire pretty quickly. So please be careful. If you need to know more information about burning restrictions, you can always go to the DNR's website. That's dnr.state.mn.us, and there's plenty of information around fire danger and the current burning restrictions. So let's do our part and prevent wildfires. Last thing we know, we need are any of our folks to be caught in one of those terrible, terrible fires. So this week's been busy. I've been trying to understand the information that's coming down from the census. And one of the really great things that we've discovered, of course, and I always thought this was going to happen this time around, is that our Native American population grew to its largest size in generations. In generations, after years years of us trying to get an accurate count of our tribal membership and population. And while some people think that this jump was surprising, I think it was not nearly as complicated as they're making it out to be, because there was a lot of really successful intentional outreach for this census especially. I think the figures are that in 2020, the number of people who identified as Native American and Alaska Native, and then combined it with another race, so let's say they're Native and African American or such, was 9.7 million. And that's up from 5.2 million in 2010. So in 10 years, we grew 2.5 million. And now our Native American and Alaska Natives account for 2.9% of all the people living in the United States. And that's all according to the latest Census Bureau information. So it's important to realize the benefits of being counted as a Native American, because there are federal dollars that come down into our communities per the treaties and agreements with the federal governments generations ago. And those dollars really affect health care. It affects education, like our BIE schools, Bureau of Indian Education schools, and Indian schools. It affects monies that are coming for economic development and other things that come to the not only the tribes, but within our urban communities. And so for generations upon generations, I know our Native ancestors didn't want to be counted. They didn't want the government to know where they were or where their children were for fear of them being removed and sent to those boarding schools. But I think the time has come to be counted and to, you know, start asking or start demanding that the federal government or state government put those resources that have been promised to us by treaties, which are the law of the land, put them into action so that we can ensure that our communities are thriving the way that they should. So thinking about that, and I guess the next thing that comes to mind is that school is just right around the corner. It's sort of interesting because for the first time in 25 years, I will not be returning to the classroom. I became a classroom teacher and then a library media specialist. And this is the first time I won't be going back as I retired in November. And it really is kind of bittersweet. I'm going to miss not seeing a lot of those kids. And our kids are going back to school. I think the Department of Education has decided that our school districts and our communities can decide how to manage school, whether it's in person or hybrid, or if at some point this Delta variant is going to make us all go back into our homes again. But I do know that many of our school districts are instituting mask mandates for the upcoming school year because the COVID-19 Delta variant is spreading like wildfire. And some places even are requiring the students and the staff to wear masks. That's going on in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And many other districts are starting to do that. And they're doing it, they're recommending that the masks be worn inside the school buildings, regardless of vaccination status, especially because so many of our students are unvaccinated. Some of our staff have not become vaccinated yet, and I wish they would. The Minnesota Department of Health is also urging those unvaccinated students and staff to get tested every week for COVID. And of course, the governor is going to make sure that there is free testing available for in the schools for all of those needs. And so if you go to the Department of Education, you're going to be able to find which schools are requiring the masks and which are not, and how that's going to change over time. But for our American Indian communities, I want to remind you that states and school districts that have 10 or more American Indian students enrolled in each school has to, by law, establish American Indian Education Parent Advisory Committee. And so if you are not familiar with that, or you don't know if your school has this American Indian Education Parent Advisory Committee, check with your administrators, check with your principal, because they absolutely need, by law, to have these. And the reason for this is to create a partnership and an advisory role to the districts to ensure that our American Indian students are receiving culturally relevant and equitable education opportunities. And this is really critical to the achievement and the success of our students statewide. And it's your right as an American Indian parent to partner with your school and give these committees and information the data they need so that you can decide how to use testing data, attendance data, graduation rates, and student count to make sure that the resources are there for our students. So please check with your school and make sure that you have one. And if they don't, make sure that gets established. And if there's not anybody on it, please step up and become that person. Find other families, other parents to participate in it, because we really want to make sure that our students have that unique education experience and are having culturally relevant academic resources so that they are successful in education and have a successful future. So I hope that your back to school experience is going to be a good experience. I hope that everyone is going to find that they're happy to be back in school, seeing their friends, seeing their teachers. I know a lot of teachers that miss their students. And so with that, I'm going to sign off. This is State Senator Mary Konish, and we are listening to Native Roots Radio, and I'm awake, and we'll be right back after this. Chimigwich, Wopalatanka, Kiamia.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Haluza Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
The show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You could call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and you can call them with your COVID-19 questions.
Hey, that's awesome. Hey, I want to wish everybody out there a happy International Women's Day 2021, Wendy.
Oh, thank you. You know, I said to Robert earlier today, I said, you know, babe, today's National Women's Day. And he said to me, well, what is any different? What's anything different about
it's
it?
It's always that day here. Right.
But we're really excited because we have Diane Wilson. She is the author of The Seed Keeper. That's the book we're going to be talking about today. But she's also written a memoir, Spirit Car Journey to a Dakota Past, and a nonfiction book, Beloved Child, A Dakota Way of Life. She is the executive director for the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance, a national coalition of tribes and organizations working to create sovereign food systems for Native people. She is a Midwakan descendant enrolled on the Rosebud Reservation, and she lives in Schaefer, Minnesota. So welcome, Diane. It's so, we're honored to have you on today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah,
we're excited to talk about the things that are going on, but also your book. So why don't we talk about that? And we were reading about it, and we do have the book. And one of the things, let's talk about the inspiration of the book and about this Dakota woman.
Yes, well, I've been working with seeds for about 20 years now. And I first heard about them when I started volunteering at a little farm down in Farmington where they had these old seeds, Cherokee Trail of Tears corn. They had 800-year-old tobacco. And I started volunteering and just fell in love with these beautiful old seeds that were carrying stories from the families and the communities that had grown them for many, many years. And then the spark that started really the story that became The Seed Keeper was when I was participating on the Dakota Commemorative March, and I heard about the Dakota women in 1862, just before, it was right after the war of 1862 and before they were about to be removed from the state. And in order to make sure that they could still take care of their families, they sowed seeds into the hems of their skirts and they hid them in their pockets. And they made sure that we had seeds for future generations. So when I'm growing out this corn today, I have to give thanks to those women who made such a sacrifice to make sure that they protected those seeds. So that's the lesson and the teaching that I was trying to carry forward in this book.
Well, I think it's really interesting, too, the scenario of this young girl.
Rosalie Ironwing.
She was with her family, and then at 5 years old, she went somewhere and then had to come back and learn this stuff. I think that's really happens a lot in our community.
Yes. Yes, this is the work of cultural recovery. And to me, the seeds and our indigenous foods are one of the most profound ways we can do this healing work.
Yeah. How did you come up with Rosalie Iron Wing? Is she somebody you know? Did you make her up? Is she you? And we don't want you to give up too much for the, you know, our listening audience. We want them to read the book, so kind of leave a little bit of a mystery.
Right.
Well, I think all of the characters in the book are a composite. So part of, and for Rosalie in particular, part of what she is demonstrating in her life is this learning journey where you've come to a place as a result of all the assimilation experiences that your family has had. And she's come to a place, she's been through foster care, she has, her family has been through boarding school, and there is so little left of the knowledge, but there is enough. There is enough of a thread to the past that's what begins to pull her on her journey that brings her back to her family and her community. And one of the guides on that journey are these seeds.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many stories that this character has missed out because we talk about the stars. We talk about all these stories that and seeds that surround, you know. And one of the things, too, you know, we talk about the three grandmothers, and I wonder if you could tell our audience a little bit about that.
The three sisters?
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah. Three grandmothers, that works for me. I relate. So the three sisters is a beautiful way of gardening where you grow your corn, your beans, and your squash in what is a collaborative relationship between the three plants. And really, if you think about it, native gardeners were the first to invent what is now called permaculture, where you grow plants in organic gardening and permaculture. Native gardeners have been doing that for thousands of years. But the beautiful arrangement in a three sisters garden is that the beans will fix the nitrogen in the soil that the corn needs to grow. The corn provides this tall stalk for the beans to wrap around and grow tall. And then the squash shades the roots and helps keep out the weeds. So together they make this perfect union that is also nutritionally whole food for our families.
Amazing. It really is amazing. And, it's so sad today that, we're using GMOs and all these, artificial ways to grow our food where, years ago, the natives just knew how to do it. Robert and I went to a place, I can't remember where it was, and we learned about that. It was like a little village. Do you remember that?
No.
It was like a little village, and we went there, and they had teepees, and we walked around.
Oh,
and
I know you're
somebody,
talking about Gibbs Farm.
Gibbs Farm,
oh.
Yeah. And
oh,
they
yeah.
taught us. They taught us about that there, and I remember, years ago when we went there, I was amazed by that. I was like, "This is so simple and makes so much sense. Why aren't we still doing this?"
Yeah, because our legacy as Native people is that we've been brilliant agriculturalists for thousands of years. And these seeds that our ancestors were so careful to protect, these seeds hold that original genetic material that's been protected. And that is so precious these days. And it's so much healthier than a lot of the foods that you find now in your grocery store.
Do you feel like there's a renaissance of this thinking? I think,
yes.
Our culture kind of a couple generations with the government trying to get rid of us and, all the colonization thinking of our people.
Yeah.
I think the Gen Zs and the young people are going to really bring things back. And I've seen it as a high school teacher that these kids are a lot prouder being Native American than I was in the 70s and 60s because it wasn't cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. Even 15 years ago, there was so little happening in terms of the indigenous food movement. And now we've got incredible chefs who are developing, finally, a recognized Native American cuisine. So that's long overdue.
Right, and the berries and the teas and the roots.
Yes.
I always want to say roots, but it's roots.
Depends on where you're from.
Exactly.
Right. Well, Wendy's from New York, so she always looks at me kind of funny when I say roots. But this is exciting. So the book is called Seed Keeper.
The Seed Keeper.
The Seed Keeper. Yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's going to be coming out on March 9th. And you have a launch going on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so tomorrow night, this is an online event, of course, at 7 o'clock Central. We have an hour launch in which we'll play a video poem created for the poem that opens the book, in which the seeds themselves speak. And they ask about that relationship, that original agreement that human beings had with seeds. So we have a video poem. We have, I'll be reading a couple of short excerpts and talking about the book. And then I've invited two Dakota writers to also read with me, just to uplift their work. They're emerging writers, and they'll have their first books coming out within the next year or two.
Wow, we're here, and we are really, we're here with...
We're here with Diane Ross.
Thank you.
And we're talking about The Seed Keeper. She is the author of, and it's a very interesting story. We have to go to commercial break, and we'll be talking with Diane as soon as we get back.
There you go. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakan Jahade, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakan Jahade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Well, we have an author on today, Wendy, Diane Wilson of The Seed Keeper. And, you know, I'm perusing through the book, and I love how it's, you know, nowadays, I guess 2002 is not nowadays, but I'm old, so that just seems like a few years ago. And then it goes back and forth, and that's, I really love that kind of historical kind of writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you look up The Seed Keeper, it says, a haunting novel spanning several generations, The Seed Keeper follows a Dakota family's struggle to preserve their way of life and their sacrifices to protect what matters most. I love that.
Yeah. Diane, I have a question for you about writing before we get back into the book and the what's happening. Is so how do you write? Do you write in the morning? Do you write a certain amount of pages? Like I've seen a writer who she talked about write 2 pages a day. You know, mm-hmm. what is your game plan when you write?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the ideal world, I like to write first thing in the morning while it's still dark. So to get up at 5 and write, because I also because I still work for a nonprofit, I would write say from 5 to 7 or 8. So then I've given what is my fresh energy that's right out of dreams to the writing. And then I can go about whatever I need to get done the day.
Yeah, I was going to ask, does any of your ideas for your books come from dreams? So you kind of just answered that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, that's really, really our native way, too. I mean, I was named because my choka drummed my name, you know, so that's deep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where our writing lives. And then language. Sometimes I've dreamt, I'll hear language being spoken. So that's the energy that I want to bring into the writing, because that's where you get that more poetic, the more lyrical, dreamlike writing.
Wow, interesting. I love that. Yeah. I really do. Could you tell us a little bit about the non nonprofit. Well, I don't know if it's a nonprofit, but it's the organization that you're the executive director for, the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance. Could you tell us a little bit about that? I'd love you to talk about that.
Well, it's such a perfect fit with writing. So I think of all of the work that I do as the same work. It's just in different ways, different tools. So we call it NAFSA, Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance. It's a national coalition of Native individuals, tribes, organizations who are all working together to rebuild sovereign food systems. So seed work is definitely a really fundamental program of doing this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that, you know, on your book launch on March 9th at 7 p.m. Central, there's a video poem by Missy Whiteman, and I know her father had passed away, and I think over a year ago, but he was huge in the gardening and helping our young people really learn about gardening. So it's really a great kind of combination to have her do this video for you. Plus, she's a great filmmaker.
And so you knew Ernie Whiteman?
I've met him. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He's big in the community. I mean, my students, many of my students have worked for them. Yeah. And he,
Well, I worked with Ernie for 11 years. And then I actually dedicated the Seed Keeper to him.
Aww.
Yeah, because he was such a profound teacher and elder for all of us. I learned so much from Ernie. So to be able to continue his work by working with his daughter to create the video poem, to me is just, again, that's how we do it. We just keep, he took such care to prepare his daughter and all of us for the time when he wouldn't be here so that we would carry forward his teachings.
Yeah. It says, for the seed keepers, the dreamers of wild health in memory of Ernie Whiteman. Yeah. Because that's the organization, the Dream of Wild Health, right?
Yes. That's where I worked before NAFSA.
Oh, cool. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's talk a little bit, you know, about your partnering organizations that are helping you really rejuvenate, and you know, it's great because I know a lot of allies, non-Native allies, are very interested in doing and supporting Native Americans in a good way, and it's really it's awesome to have a book like this that they could read and really get clued in on how we do things.
Yeah, well. Back, I think it was in January when we were watching just how hard hit our communities were by this pandemic and how much people were struggling and suffering and the issue with not only the illness, but hunger as well. And so we started to talk about what can we do to just help uplift the parts of our culture that really help us get through hard times. And so seeds became an immediate focus. And then we realized how many other art forms are inspired by seeds as well. So we connected with storytellers, with Keith Sokola, the musician, with a seed farmer who's going to teach planting, with a youth group. So Dream of Wild Health is a partner, NAFSA is a partner, All My Relations Gallery, the Hennepin County Libraries, Birch Bark Books, and Milkweed Editions. So we brought together this really beautiful coalition of organizations who just pitched in, and we put up this full Seed Week in less than 2 months.
Wow, that's awesome. And then that reminds me, too, that you mentioned some of your partners like Birch Bark. I couldn't read my handwriting.
One of us could talk today.
I couldn't read my handwriting because I just wrote that down. Yeah. Where else can they pick up this book? And will it be after the 9th?
It's available now. It's out. And Birch Bark Books is one of my favorite places to send people because it's an independent bookstore that really focuses on Native authors. And Milkweed Editions is another place. I say support those independent publishers and bookstores. Stay away from Amazon if you can.
We agree 100%. It's hard to do, but we agree. And I know Birch Bark Books. Ooh, that was hard to say today. It has a lot of other fun stuff in the store too.
Yes.
Put your mask on and check out not only the books, but they have a lot of cool stuff.
You know, I was reading about seeds, and they have like a doomsday vault that has seeds. 930,000 varieties of food crops in this in Norway. It's kept
Svalbard.
Yeah,
yeah, that's not our way.
No, I know.
To put. I mean, I understand they're putting away seeds in the event of a catastrophe, mm-hmm. a natural catastrophe that wipes out everything.
Yeah.
But the best way to preserve your seeds is actually to share them, to make sure that they're being grown out by other gardeners, that you're eating the food and you're sharing them back. So that way, that if my garden gets wiped out, say, by raccoons, that maybe somebody's garden 5 miles away is going to have a full crop, and we're able to keep those seeds sustained. So they were always meant to be shared. They were always meant to be a way to bring community together.
I like that idea a lot better than having a doomsday vault.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, too. Where does somebody... Like, I know I was talking to you earlier today, and I know, like, Ho-Chunk Nation, and with cooperation of DNR, handed out seeds. But it's still, you're wondering, man, are these, like, have GMO in it, even though they look like beautiful seeds? And then I've had people hand me non-GMO corn, and, you know, I've given it to people that are really, you know, because we're not growing stuff in our backyard, but I've given it to other native people that are putting these gardens on these gardens. And so how do we find a real pure seed?
So buy organic always. The other seeds are at risk of being covered with all kinds of chemicals. So just buy organic first of all, and then buy heirloom. So then that way you're getting these seeds that haven't been crossbred or bred with another species, genetically modified. Native Seed or Seed Savers in Iowa has a very extensive catalog of heirloom seeds, and they carry a number of native varieties as well. Those are my two tips: organic and heirloom.
Nice.
So we got a couple minutes left, and I really want to let you talk about what you need to talk about. I'm just really excited to read this book because it's about now, it's about our past, and it's about our future, you know, by eating food that's real food.
Yeah, remind our listening audience, too, about the Zoom event tomorrow night.
Yeah, so tomorrow night is the launch event for the Seed Keeper at 7 o'clock Central. You can sign up for the webinar at allmyrelationsarts.com. And... it'll be an hour, and we'll have a video poem, we'll have readings, we'll have two other Dakota writers. And the one thing I'd really like to say about this book is that seeds these days, like so much else, have become very politicized. The whole discussion around genetically modified seeds versus heirloom seeds versus organic has been taken and become just another marketing-driven, politicized argument that divides people. And the big point I wanted to make in the way that I wrote this book is that it's about relationship. This is a way of expressing mitakuye owasi. We are all related.
Oh.
So what I try to show in the book is see how our relationship has changed from the time when these Dakota women were so concerned they hid them in their skirts to the time now where, you know, so much knowledge has been displaced that relationship is what has changed. And it's that relationship that when we begin to reclaim that, that's when we're doing the healing work, the cultural recovery.
Well, Diane Wilson, the Seed Keeper of the book, Pini Gigi, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back.